Let me begin by just reading through chapter 3, all 30 verses. Chapter 3, verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits, most likely 90 feet by 9 feet. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, and the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that certain time, Chaldeans came forward, and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it usually than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire kindled those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon, and the Chaldeans ground their teeth. That was added by me in case you didn't know. Okay, so last week we spent on the first seven verses. Well, I think we actually got... No, I think that's about as far as we got. First seven verses. Is that right? The first couple of questions on page 28. We saw that in the account, especially in these first 14 verses, that or actually the first seven verses rather, yeah, that Daniel, as he's writing this, he's actually mocking the whole scene. That's the point of all of that repetition, repeating all of those musicians, all of the list of officials is repeated in a couple of times in verses 2 through 4. The list of musical instruments is repeated 4 times in the first 15 verses. And the fact that Nebuchadnezzar set this image up was repeated about 10 or 11 times in these first 15 verses. I don't know if you picked up on it, but I was trying to have a monotonous, patronizing tone of voice when I read those repetitions. Well, that was the point, because that's what That's what Daniel was doing. He was mocking the whole scene. It's a serious scene, right? I mean, let me put it this way. It was serious to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, wasn't it? It was very serious. But Daniel was mocking the fact that this is just an image that Nebuchadnezzar made and set up, and he got, and he gathered together all of this pomp, all of these officials from all 127 provinces in the Babylonian Empire, and all this great big old huge worship band that he assembled together, and all of that, and the climax of this comedy that Daniel is writing, this satire that Daniel is writing here, is in verse 8 itself, where at the sound of the musical, in verse 7, I'm sorry, at the sound of the musical instruments, everybody just fell down, just mechanically, without thinking. As soon as the instruments play, boom, they fell down and bowed down before it. That's, if you study, I'm told, I've read that if you study comedy, that one of the elements in comedy and humor is people doing things mechanically unthinking. And that's exactly what Daniel was portraying here. That was the whole point. All his pomp and circumstance and people just falling down and mechanically unthinking doing this. And so why do you think Daniel resorted to mockery here in these? That's not a question out of the workbook, but it's, you read the commentaries, and almost every commentator is going to comment on all of this repetition here and how Daniel's mocking the whole scene. So it's apparently obvious. And so why do you think that he's mocking the whole scene? Do you think that's appropriate for him to do? If so, what appropriate point would he be making? I know I popped one on you that wasn't in the book. Brian. Yeah, the ridiculousness of it all. It's just a mere man. Just the ridiculousness of it all, yeah. And how we'll go along with it. It's not the first time in history that's happened.
Reminds me of Psalm 2. Why are the nations in an uproar, and people devising a vain thing? Kings of earth take their stand, and rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. And those terrors, their fetters apart, cast away their cords. He who sits in heaven laughs.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yes, same thing. So maybe Daniel just read Psalm 2 that morning for his devotions before he wrote this chapter. Yes, the way he mocked the prophets of Baal, yes, yes. Maybe he went to the WC, you know, exactly. So... And then also, I love the way that God is announcing his intentions. That was last week. Never mind. Okay, so now we are ready for page 29, those questions. It starts at the bottom of page 28, section, the author has his second section as verses 8 through 29, and he writes this. He says, Daniel's three friends refused to pay homage to the statue erected by Nebuchadnezzar and are therefore to be thrown into the fiery furnace. Look closely at their response to Nebuchadnezzar in verses 16 through 18. How confident are they of being delivered from the fiery furnace? That's the first question. And the second question is, what other fate do they consider a possibility? So the first question, how confident are they of being delivered from the fiery furnace? Ryan. Yeah, so they were confident about their response, but about as far as their confidence whether or not they were going to be delivered.
That was the whole believe it if not, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Both verses 17, 18, if it be or if it not.
Yeah. Yeah. If it be or if it not be. Anybody else have anything else written down? Yes, exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah, so you can say it this way. They are confident in God's ability to deliver them, but uncertain about his will to deliver them. Confident about his ability, uncertain about whether that's his will or not. So they were the answer to that second question. What other fate do they consider a possibility? Yeah, they're prepared for martyrdom, aren't they?
I think it says a lot too about their demeanor. I mean, it says he's in a rage. Like he's probably sweating and spitting and, you know, angry. And their whole reaction is, we don't really have anything we need to say.
Yeah.
We don't really have anything concerning the matter.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, it's just, there's like kind of
calm. Yeah, exactly. He's all but just stumbling down the steps. And
not that long ago that they were taken into captivity.
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah.
So a little after.
They've already gone through a pretty bad time. And so.
Yes.
Which way is it going to go? Well, it didn't go so well last time. So
right. It's probably been at least 4 years or so. Because I don't know if you remember, but last week I said the possible historical context for this event would be found in Zedekiah's summons to Babylon, which you read about in Jeremiah 51, verses 59 through 64. He got summoned. He got called onto the carpet. And I know Andrew Steinman, he's got one of the better exegetical commentaries out there on Daniel. He's got a whole section on developing that possibility. But that seems like otherwise we have no idea exactly when this took place. But it's very likely it could have taken place when Zedekiah was summoned to Babylon. Jeremiah 51, verses 59 through 64, if you want to read that later. And so I think that puts them 4 or 5 years into the captivity, which is still very early on. Yeah. So the bottom line is for Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah. I like using their Hebrew names. The bottom line for them was the only thing that mattered to them was to keep the first commandment, even if it kills them. That was the issue for them. And so they were able to, God enabled them to face that situation calmly, resolutely. Yeah, that you can just imagine. I don't know, sometimes I go off on tangents in my mind when I'm reading, studying some of these things. I try, what would be the best actor to portray Nebuchadnezzar just going through these fits and spitting and all of that? Pardon? Well, one that I came up with was, what was that?
Gabriel.
One that I came up with is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that real old movie, The Robe. The nasally guy that plays Nero. He would have probably been a good one for playing Nebuchadnezzar in this role. Okay. So then, you weren't even a twinkle in your mama's eye at that point. What was that, in the 50s? Something like that? Yeah. I was a twinkle in my... Well, anyway. Okay, on page... It's if it was 53, yeah, I was the only one. There was only three of us here that was around at that time. I don't know. Okay. That middle paragraph there on page 29. Much to his surprise, when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the fiery furnace, he saw not only the three friends alive and well, but a fourth man with them who looked like a son of the gods. Who is this person? And what does his presence with the three friends in the fiery furnace teach us about God's relationship to his people? You may find it helpful to read Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2, before answering this question. So, who is that fourth person? Verse 25 in the fiery furnace, Ryan. That, yeah, and that's obviously who Isaiah is talking about in Isaiah 43, absolutely. Yeah, and a lot of commentators and scholars will say that's Christ, and they're a pre-incarnate Christ, or Christophany, an appearance of Christ, the pre-incarnate Christ, since it was before the incarnation. It's not exactly Christ. That's why some people would call it an appearance of the Son. And they would call it a, you want to really get fancy, they call it a theophany, appearance of the Son. But notice, what does Nebuchadnezzar call that fourth person in verse 28? Pardon? That's verse 25. What does he call him in verse 28?
Oh, an angel.
Yeah. So, which one is it? But in both cases, it's Nebuchadnezzar reporting, isn't it? So, is it an appearance? A theophany or a Christophany, or is that Christ in there, pre-incarnate Christ in the furnace with them, or is it an angel? Verse 28 kind of tells you how Nebuchadnezzar interpreted, right? He looks in the furnace in verse 25 and sees another one who looks like a son of the gods. And then in verse 28, he refers to him as an angel. So what did you guys have written? How many had Christ, a pre-incarnate Christ? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I put that this could be Jesus or an angel. But God gives us protection. Very good.
Excellent. Yeah. And by the way, Seth and Lily went home that night and they were going through all the rest of Daniel trying to figure out who that character was. So Seth would keep texting me. You know, I asked him to find the place where it's unmistakably pre-incarnate Christ, unmistakably. And so, well, they sent me one answer and I answered back, and Seth said, Lily's laughing. I'll tell you what they said, what they came on in a moment. Okay. But, it might be helpful just to look at the other appearances of spirit beings in the book of Daniel. For instance, the next one is going to be in chapter 6, if you turn there. Chapter 6. And look at verses 21 and 22. By the way, an awful lot of most of my commentaries make it a Christophany, make that pre-incarnate Christ in there. But when you read and you think about it, it's an assumption. When it boils down to it, Joe had the best answer. Well, it could be Christ or it could be an angel. Either way, he walks through our trials with us. chapter 6, verses 20 and 21. And let's see, is that what I have down there? 21 and 22, yes. So this is the next time one of them needs to be protected. This time not by an arrogant king, but by his conniving, arrogant, malicious officials, Daniel in the lion's den. And notice in 21, well, in I'll just start in verse 19 because it's fun to picture all of this. Verse 19, then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions, and he came near to the den where Daniel was. He cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, that answers the question right away, doesn't it? Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and before you. O king, I have done no harm. So here, clearly, from Daniel's own mouth, my God sent an angel. So is an angel in the lion's den. Then I'm going to skip to chapter 7, verses 15 and 16. He had seen this vision Daniel had. And then after that vision, he says, as for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. I guess maybe it'll... That, I'll show you in a minute, that that's clearly an angel. That spirit being. It's clearly an angel. I'll show you why I say that. Because I say that because of something that happens earlier in chapter 7. And then chapter 8, verses 13 through 16. So again, chapter 8 is another vision of Daniel's, of the ram and the goat. And he sees that vision. And then in verse 13, what did I say, 13 through 16? Yeah. In verse 13, Daniel writes, "Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the one who spoke, 'For how long is the vision concerning the regular burnt offering, the transgression that makes desolate, and the giving over of the sanctuary and host to the to be trampled underfoot?' And he said to me, 'For 2,300 evenings and mornings. Then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state.' When I, Daniel, had seen the vision, I sought to understand it. And behold, there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, and it called, 'Gabriel, make this man understand the vision.'" So the one having an appearance of a man is Gabriel. He sees this one having the appearance of a man, and then he hears his voice say, "Gabriel, give this man the understanding of the vision." So that one that looks like a man is Gabriel. Then chapter 9, I didn't even have that written down, but in chapter 9, verse 20 and going forward, it's clearly Gabriel that brings Daniel the answers to his prayer and delivers the prophecy of 70 weeks. So notice the progression here. Notice what we're seeing here. It was an angel, clearly an angel that was in the lion's den that protected Daniel. It's an angel that interpreted the dream in chapter 17, or at least part of the dream, chapter 7 rather, to Daniel. It's an angel here in chapter 8. Then look over in chapter 10. This is a long section, sorry. But I'm going to read verses 5 through 26. It's too bad this is a session that Seth had to miss. he and Lily were going through. Anyway, 5 through 26. So the vision that he gets in chapter 10, that's his last vision, and it's the same vision. It's chapters 10, 11, and 12. That's all one unit there, talking about the same vision. And he starts talking about this vision he gets. He said, notice how verse 1, he gets the vision. Notice in verse 2 how it affected him. "In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, and I did not anoint myself for the full 3 weeks. On the 24th of the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen, with a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. I can't read tonight. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a multitude. Who is this? Who would you think? And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. For the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. So I was left alone and saw this great vision, and no strength was left in me. My radiant appearance was fearfully changed. In other words, he went white, probably. And I retained no strength. Then I heard the sound of his words. And as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in deep sleep with my face to the ground. And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. I mean, this is an incredible description of this being, isn't it? And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright. For now I have been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, now get this, fear not, Daniel, from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia. Now, are you still thinking pre-incarnate Christ, or are you thinking angel here? Yeah, you start out, you read this description, you're thinking, oh my, this is almost sounding a little bit like Revelation 1. But no. Let me just continue on, verse 15. When he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and was mute. And behold, one in the likeness of the children of man touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke. I said to him who stood there before me, O my Lord, by reason of the vision, pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For now no strength remains in me, and no breath is left in me. Again, one having the appearance of a man touched me and strengthened me, and he said, O man, greatly loved, fear not, peace be with you, be strong and of good courage. And as he spoke to me, I was strengthened. He said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Then he said, do you know why I've come to you? But now I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except Michael, your prince. So clearly this is an angel. So there's an angel in the lion's den with Daniel protecting him. It was an angel in chapter 7 explaining the vision to Daniel. Angel in chapter 8 explaining the vision to Daniel. Angel in chapter 10 explaining vision to Daniel. And some of these angels were described as having the appearance of a man and all of that. So it's uncertain in the fiery furnace whether or not that was a Christophany, an appearance of the pre-incarnate Christ, or whether it was an angel. Like I said, Joe's answer was spot on. And so it could have been Jesus. In my view, when I look at the evidence, it's unlikely. It was. But is there one spirit being that appears in Daniel that is unmistakably Christ? And the answer to that question is yes. It's in chapter 7. Not verses 15 and 16 that we already looked at. but verses 13 and 14. Let me start in verse 9. He gets this vision of these four beasts followed by a fourth kingdom. The fourth beast is terrible, and he tramples down the saints and all of that. And then Daniel starts in verse 9 and says, "As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat." Now, who do you suppose the Ancient of Days is? Yeah, God. And we'll see it's God the Father. It's God, right? The Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000s times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed. So the horn on that beast was speaking these great things, and Daniel immediately takes us to heaven and shows us the Ancient of Days sitting on his throne and opening his books. That's verses 9 and 10. And then verse 11 brings us right back to earth. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. As I looked, the beast was killed and the body destroyed. That was the result of the Ancient of Days judgment on this beast. And he was given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. We're not going to answer that tonight. We'll get to that when we get in chapter 7. But then now look at this. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given, that is, to the one who was like a son of man, to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, and all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, one that shall not be destroyed. So who is this spiritual being that was like a son of man in verse 13? Is there any question about who that is? Or does verse 14 answer any question you might have about who that is? No, that is the pre-incarnate son. So the Ancient Days, so the fourth kingdom was trampling the saints, and Ancient of Days set up judgment, judged him, and the beast was killed, and clearly the eternal kingdom to come after that fourth kingdom, we see in verses 13 and 14, it was being given, dominion was being given to this one who's like a son of man. So, to me, this passage right here, Daniel 7, 13 and 14, that's the only place that I see in Daniel where it's unambiguous. It's clear. There's no debate. That is the pre-incarnate son, the eternal son. The other occurrences, it just seems to me that more than likely those are angels. Some of them we know are angels, like in Daniel 6. Daniel tells King Darius, God sent an angel to close the lion's mouth. And then in verses 15 and 16, there was a spirit being that was standing there. Daniel saw that was standing there and observing this whole heavenly scene, and he walked up to him. So it's clear that that spiritual being wasn't pre-incarnate Christ. So most of these we can see fairly clearly in Daniel 9, in Daniel 8. It's Gabriel. That it was angels. And so my conclusion that it's most likely that the fourth person in the furnace was an angel. Don't know for sure, but it seems to me that that's most likely. But like Joe says, it does not change that second question there. What does this teach us about God's relation to his people? It doesn't change whether that's Christ in the furnace or whether that's an angel in the furnace. Doesn't change the answer to that question, does it? Okay. Anybody else have anything else as far as the implications of his of God's delivering presence in the furnace with those three young Hebrew men? Yes, Julie. In verse 25, what version, what translation do you have? Yeah, and that is an interpretation on their part of the Hebrew. It's one like a son of God. But remember, angels were called sons of God, weren't they? Like Genesis 6. If you take that to be angels. Yes, and we are. Yeah. So, yes, the fact that they, instead of one like a son, small s, instead of doing that, they translated like this, the son, capital S. The word the and the capital S, that's an interpretation on their part. Okay? And like I said, you know, there's a lot of scholars that conclude that that's Christ in the furnace. It's a good thing I'm not a scholar because, I think the evidence lies elsewhere. But I, none of us can prove it one way or the other. One of the things that I think that we can say here, you know, we all want the protection and deliverance that those three Hebrew young men got in the furnace. But don't overlook this fact. Even though they were delivered, they were exposed to extreme life-threatening danger. So In our pursuit of God, in our following Christ, it's as likely he will expose us to danger as well as deliver us from danger. And we're not always promised deliverance of danger. One man put it this way. He says, this is a token, not a rule of what we can expect from God, you know, of God's care for his people. It's a token in the sense he did it in this case, and it shows you how the comprehensiveness of his ability to deliver. But it's not a guarantee that will be delivered. And we see that all over the pages of Scripture. And you can read a summary of that in Hebrews chapter 11. And so anyway. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's a very good point. Pardon? Oh, Stephen in Acts 7? Yeah, right. Yes, exactly. Stephen in Acts 7, he didn't get delivered. Nick Saint and the other three, they didn't get delivered. Pardon? Yeah, I kind of liked when the three Hebrews say, and he will deliver us. I kind of like to make that say, the deliverance is going to be one of two ways. Either deliver us from this fire or deliver us from this world. Okay. There's in Matthew 28:20. I love the way that Matthew wrote that closing verse, just the phrase, the exact way that he worded it. He says, and be the second half of verse 20, last sentence of Matthew. And it's Jesus speaking, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the day. The Greek, I didn't get around to looking it up before I came tonight, but this, so I can't remember the exact wording there in the Greek, but the emphasis here is I will be with you every day and to the end of days. He's not just looking to the end. I'll be with you all the way out there. He's looking at all of the intervening time too. I will be with you every day, all the way to out there. I think that's pretty cool. It's a great promise. Okay. There at the bottom of page 29, the author says, this passage is careful to describe how the three friends appeared after they came out of the fire. The hair of their heads was not singed. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, can you imagine? The hair on their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed. And no smell of fire had come upon them. What does this teach us about God's ability to protect and care for his people? Let me comment first before you answer that question about the description here. Notice in earlier in the chapter, when they bound them, notice verse 21. Now, this is back when Nebuchadnezzar was spitting all over himself. Daniel says, then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Why do you think he took the time to describe all of that they were wearing? Yes, yes, yes. Pardon? Yeah. Well, probably not wool. But most think that the reason that he went through all of this description. Of course, they didn't have fire captain in the room with them. Yeah.
I've been in and out of a lot of fires.
Yeah.
And I'll come home and Julie goes, oh, you had a fire. And I've taken showers.
Yeah.
Multiple showers.
Yeah.
Since the fire. And she still smells.
Yeah. And these guys didn't even have the benefit of a shower.
So that's the point. That's the part right there that sticks out to me.
Yeah.
No smell of fire.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, the question is, what does this teach us about God's ability to protect and care for his people? Yeah.
He's
easy. Yes. 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 Remember the one who had legion in him? And he was going around naked and he burst chains and stuff like that. When the people came, he was clothed in his right mind, sitting, calm, and all that. Yeah, so complete, comprehensive. It speaks to the power, the extent, and the details of his deliverance. It's incredible. Yeah, I mean, it's just, and isn't that the way God is in our life when he lavishes his grace on us? It's amazing to me to see the very details, just how detailed he is in his care for us and the way that he sheds his grace on us. Yes, Ryan.
You know, I like how it goes like that. That extra, like, oh yeah, they made out loud that, you know, they had the black charcoal smoke.
Yeah.
But I like how like God goes like for like.
Exactly.
Because I'm thinking of when Elijah mocked all them. And
yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The details. The details that he goes to. It's like the cherry on the top, man, or more. You know, maybe a cherry tree. I don't know, but it's just okay, we're gonna have to stop there. We'll take up that third section, the next week, and do the personal implications. So again, just let me remind you, on pages 30 to 33, what the book wants us to do is the author shares gospel glimpses in the chapter, whole Bible connections from things in the chapter with the rest of Scripture, theological soundings, theological things that you find in the chapter. And then what they want us to do on pages 32 and 33 is to reflect on the implications of those things for our lives and share those. Gospel glimpses, whole Bible connections, theological soundings, and then top of page 33, the chapter as a whole. Yes, Joe. Yes.
We didn't get to this week before last, and then I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't here last week. So as I was looking at the gospel glimpses from the previous one on page 24, it had talked about on page 22 that when Daniel was confronted with a truly desperate situation, prospect of death, he doesn't despair, and then it just said to seek mercy from the God of heaven. And so as I was looking back, when I had done the precept. And it was about my children.
Ah.
And it was me just pouring out my heart to the Lord and my concern for them and their salvation. And Sarah was 7 and Wes was 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I felt like I was saying things and I was presenting the gospel to them and it was falling on deaf ears.
Yeah.
And yet, as I read that and brought it all back to me, I just was like, you know, I was seeking His mercy in that situation. And obviously, He's more than that.
Answered death, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
It was just an incredible.
Yeah, what a discovery. To go back and find that. Whoa. Yeah. That's neat. That's great. Thanks for sharing that. Praying mom's a good thing, huh, Wes? Okay.